Access number 31464, Mr. Dennis Goodrich, Rail 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Goodrich?
Wood Green, London.
What was the date?
10th of the 3rd, 1921.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? What your parents did for a living, what kind of family?
My father was a diamond setter. My mother was just a housewife. But there's not much more to it, really. He was a diamond setter. I don't know anything about... Oh, my mother's grandfather was... My mother's father was a thatcher in Somerset. And they all in that side of my family all comes from the West Country. My mother's side all comes from the West Country. And my dad's... I don't know very much about my father's family at all, except for what he did in his life, you know.
Now, what was life like? Did you grow up in Wood Green then?
Yes, yes.
And what was life like there, growing up in Wood Green?
Oh, very good, actually. I had no bother at all, actually. Quite happy. Happy family. We're always a very happy family. I had a brother and sister.
And was there much money in the... Was it a good trade?
No. Those days, it was a depression on then. And the depression was very bad for my father. He had no work at all, so we had to make do what we could get. My mother went out sort of charring to do jobs to get some more money into the house.
What kind of a house did you live in? Was it a flat or a...
No, it was an old-fashioned Victorian sort of house. We had the top flat, the top story, we had that. We had about three rooms in the top. All the houses were the same, the whole road, all terrace houses on down that road. It's quite a nice area, but it was very, very sort of cramped, really.
Do you remember the name of the road?
Yeah, Lascots Road, Lascots.
And so what was life like on the street? I mean, was there a sense of community?
Oh, definitely.
Tell us a bit about that, because that's changed.
People all got together because times were hard then, but like they're saying they are at the moment. And we all got together and did what we could.
And... what about, I mean, did you, were your parents able to feed and clothe you properly, or was there a problem with that?
Pardon?
Feeding and, I mean, food.
Oh, no, we didn't go short.
You weren't very poor.
No, we weren't very poor.
Now, tell us a bit about your education.
Well, I went to a primary school in Wood Green, and then I moved to another primary school in the other part of Wood Green. And from there, I got a free, scholarship into a grammar school in another one in Wood Green, which was a very, very good school, Trinity County School. That was very good.
So you obviously did well at school.
Did quite well at school, actually. Yes, I did.
What subjects did you like? What did you dislike?
Well, I liked math. I liked maths very much. Trigonometry. I was very fond of maths and algebra and trigonometry, and I learnt did Latin for 5 years, and French. But I can't remember much Latin, to be honest.
Any subjects you didn't like?
I don't really know. Well, music I didn't like because of the way... I liked music, I didn't like the way they taught it. It was a theory of music.
And what about sport? Were you interested in sport?
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah.
So what sports do you play?
I played football at school. And cricket. And lots of swimming. We had a very Olympic pool built in Wood Green. I was taught to dive off the top board by a Canadian Olympics diver, and that was quite good. I did a lot of diving and swimming, and I went all over different places. I did represent the county for diving.
But so pretty good at that. Did you play for the school team and anything else? Or
yes, I played football for the school team.
Now, was there an officer's cadets or anything like that at school?
No, not one.
And what about hobbies outside of school? Were you in the Boy Scouts or any of those boys?
I was in the Wolf Cubs and the Boy Scouts.
Now, what did you do with it? Because they were quite interested in those, because they are quite military. What was yours like?
Oh, no, it wasn't anything but military. It was all more based on country life, country pursuits and things like that, more or less.
So what sort of thing would you do?
Oh, we would go out in groups out in the country looking for wildlife and things like that, you know. It's quite interesting for a youngster.
Camping?
Oh, yes. Camping in the rain.
How much drill or none?
None, no drill at all, no.
Anything else you or any other big hobbies you had while you were growing up?
Oh, yes, model aircraft.
Tell us about that.
Oh, I used to build my own model aircraft. I was crazy on aircraft. I read all the First World War flying books and things. I was absolutely crazy on aircraft and flying.
Now, why? What was it about it that, do you think, attracted you to it?
I don't know. I just loved it. I can't really say.
Did you get a chance to go to any of the air days? They used to have big air days.
My father used to take me to Hendon Air Display every year. And up there, I've got a book with an art prize from the school, in which I drew a picture of the Hendon Air Display and won the first prize.
Now, can you tell? I mean, we're interested in the Hendon Air. What happened? What do you remember of a typical Hendon display?
Well, they used to become mostly in these old, I didn't know it, but in these old war, first between the war biplanes and things, doing what the Red Arrow is doing now, but it's much slower, quite a lot of ground display. And they used to do flower bombing, come over the crowd and drop flower bags on you. I never missed one of those ever. I went right until I went into the Air Force myself.
Was there any opportunity to get a flight? Because they used to take people up.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. If you could afford it, they would take your people up for a flight. Yeah.
But you didn't have the money?
No, I didn't. Couldn't afford it.
Any other big hobbies?
No, that was about the biggest one. Nothing else.
Now, what qualification did you get at school then?
Well, what they called matriculation in those days, didn't they? Matriculated in English and in maths and things like that.
So how old were you when you left school?
16.
So but 1937?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was planned for you? Any chance of going to university? Or?
No, not in those days.
So what did you or your family plan for you to do?
They didn't really plan anything. They sort of left it to me. But you couldn't get a job in those days. When I left school, all my qualifications meant nothing. I ended up working in a taxi firm because I was there. Oh, that was another thing. I was interested in motor car engines. And I got a job helping out in a taxi firm for a while.
What as?
A fitter, but what would you call an apprentice fitter?
Was it a proper apprenticeship?
No.
So it was just helping in the garage?
Yeah.
And what do you remember about the work there?
I didn't like it very much, because you had to travel by train, by tube up to London, and it was always covered in oil and grease and on my clothes going home at night, so I got fed up with it. And then...
How long did you do it for?
Oh, about a year. And then...
So what then?
Then my father said, why don't you come up to work, try to work up in Hatton Garden with me? Because things were picking up then. So I went up and I became a trainee diamond mounter. I wasn't apprenticed. I became a trainee diamond mounter.
Now,
in Hatton Garden.
Can you tell us a bit about that? Because it's not the sort of thing we come across very often. What does a diamond mounter do?
Can you see?
They can't see, you see. No. You'll have to describe things for them.
Well, they make rings, engagement rings, brooches, all sort of jewellery. It's all made. But that's the person who makes it is a mounter. The person who finishes the stones is a setter. That my dad was a setter, and I was a mounter, and my brother was also a mounter in there as well.
Was it a skilled trade?
Very highly skilled, yes.
And what do you think of that? Did you enjoy it?
Oh yes, I did enjoy it. Yes, very much so.
So what happened? So you're doing that till the war started?
Yes. Yes. And so, well, when the war started, now there's a thing. When the war, just before the war started, I went to join the RFVR because I was so interested in flying. But they said, come back when you're 19.
Now, how did you go about that? I mean, what do you remember of the interview or whatever?
Well, I went back again when I was 19, and they said to me, oh, we want you straight away. I left home, didn't. Just said goodbye to my parents, took a day off work, went to the interview. They said, we want you straight away. They swore me in. And
when was this?
In the March 1940.
Ah, so that's after the war had started?
Yes. Yeah.
Ah, right, let's go back.
They wouldn't take me because I wasn't old enough.
Right, so your first time they said, come back in a year's time, basically.
Well, not a year, no, it's about a few months, actually, 6 months.
Right, so the war had already started when you tried to join the
force. That's right, yes.
Right. Now, tell me about the outbreak of war then. I mean, what do you remember the day war broke out?
Yes.
Tell us about that. It's an old joke, I know, but
yes.
Do you remember the
day? Oh, yes, quite well, yes.
What happened?
Well, I was in the back garden helping my father dig an air raid shelter for an air raid shelter in the back garden, the Anderson Shelters, and the sirens went, and we and we heard an aircraft coming. Everybody thought we were going to be bombed straight away, but obviously we weren't.
It was a false alarm, wasn't it?
False alarm, yes.
Did you hear the broadcast, the Chamberlain?
Yes, yes.
What did you think at the time?
Well, I couldn't really understand him because I really thought he's not the sort of person I would trust in the job, to be perfectly honest.
Why not?
The way he spoke, he was sort of unsure of himself. And in those days, there were lots of newsreels in the cinemas. When you saw him on the newsreels, you knew that he wasn't really up to it. Do you know what I mean?
And what do you think about the actual war? I mean, did you think it would involve you straight away?
I thought so, yes.
So you knew you'd be, did it worry you?
No, not at all.
Had your father been in the war?
Yes.
The Great War?
Yes, yeah.
What did he do? Do you remember what he did?
He was just an infantryman in the First World War. He did about 4 years' service, I think.
Do you know which regiment?
No, I couldn't tell you that.
Did he ever talk about it? That's more.
Well, quite a bit, yes.
What did he give you an impression of when he spoke to you about it?
He wasn't very happy about the whole thing, actually, but he didn't. He was never wounded badly or anything like that, but he was quite unhappy for a couple of times. When I was young, he would still talk a little bit about it, not very much, because I was born after the war, wasn't I?
Did he put you off the infantry at all?
Yes, definitely.
In what way?
He told me about all the mud and all that. But in any case, I was so determined to get to the Air Force one day.
Right. Now, tell me a bit about. There's still some Anderson shelters about now. But could you describe what an Anderson shelter was and how you and your dad dug it? Dug it out.
It was made of corrugated iron in a circle. You bolted the two halves together, and you dug a hole. Supposed to dig a hole 5 foot deep, but you couldn't get down 5 foot in most back gardens. So we just put it as low as we could, and installed a couple of bunks in there to sit in with it.
And what was it like in there?
Damn, horrible.
Well, did it flood your one? Because it depends where
the water came up from the ground.
So did you put boards down or anything? Or?
Yes, we put boards down, yes.
And what was it like in there? I mean, did you go in there much?
No, hardly ever.
Because the bombing hadn't started?
No, the bombing hadn't started then.
Now, the other things that were on... Did you get a gas mask issue? Do you remember that?
Yes.
How did they do it? I mean, what, you know...
I can't remember. We went to the local. I don't know. We went to the local library, I believe. No. So I can't remember where I went to get the gas mask. No.
What was it like when you got one? I mean,
it was in a brown paper box sort of thing, and you saw lots of people walking around with these boxes strapped on their shoulder, but. I didn't know whether they were. They tried them out, and they put a thing on the end and said, "Oh, you're all right. It'll work, okay." But I wasn't quite sure about it. They put the hand over the end of the mask. Have you ever seen one?
I have, but what were they like to wear? That's right. I mean, we're not allowed to wear them.
Very uncomfortable.
Could you breathe all right?
Hardly.
Now, what about rationing, food rationing? Had that started? No,
it hadn't started then.
Right. And what about the blackout? How did your parents black out your flat?
We put thick curtains up and... I had a motorcycle at the time, and we had those. Have you ever seen one of those? Instead of a headlamp, you had a box fitted onto your headlamp with three little slits on. That was for you to drive with the full beam headlight on. That's all you had on to see where you were going.
And could you manage with that?
Hardly, not very well. Didn't go out at night if you could help it.
What was it like out on the streets when the blackout? I mean, could you actually see?
It was very, very dark, very bad. And it was so sudden, we weren't used to that, were we, you know? Suddenly came on us like that.
Now, what sort of recreations would you do? I mean, what did you do for amusement as a young lad? I mean, you're 18, aren't you, roughly speaking. What did you do? I mean, did you go out to the boys' club?
I belonged to a motorcycle club.
Tell me about that, then.
Lee Valley Motorcycle Club. My brother and I joined that.
What did they do?
Oh, we went down to rallies and trips all over the country to things. And also, I started grass track racing. My brother and I bought an old motorcycle and converted it into a grass track racer. And we went out to a field in Essex and we turned it into a grass track racing.
Tell me about grass track. Do they do it now?
I think they do, actually. There's a place over in northern Essex that still does it. An ordinary field, and they put... Just put post all round it, and you just ride round in the grass. It's not very exciting, really and truly, to watch, but it's quite exciting to do.
And I mean, just using old bikes.
Yeah.
Was it dangerous?
Oh yes. And funny thing about that old bike, when I went into the Air Force, I'd left it where the bike was in the farmhouse near the field. And I thought, when I come back home, I'll have that. When I got back home, somebody'd stolen it.
that wasn't part of the Lee Valley Motorcycle Club, though, the grass track, right?
They helped out, yes, yes.
And what about that? You'd go away on trips with them, would you?
Yes, we'd go to trips, yes. There was a big thing every year called the London to Land's End Trial.
Tell me about that. Did you go on that?
Oh, yes. I didn't ride in it, but we used to go and see it. Used to drive from London right down to Land's End in Cornwall, always at Easter. Started on the Good Friday, you'd come back on Easter Monday, and you'd stay overnight down there.
What was it like?
Very interesting, a lot of fun, great fun. We look forward to all that. Crowd of us youngsters all going on that trip, very good.
And what was your motorcycle? I should have asked before. I mean, you know your proper one, not the battered up one.
I had a Douglas, first of all, and then an Ivory Calthorpe.
were they good bikes?
Oh yes, very good.
And you would look after them yourself?
Oh yes, that's how I learnt to be interested in engines. Actually, when I went to work at the garage, I knew more about engines. There's a lot of people that already worked there, although I was only young, because I was so interested in that piece.
So would you buy second-hand motorcycles and do them up? You'd buy them new?
No, they were always second-hand, yes.
But you'd keep them going?
You'd keep them going, yes.
And they were British motorcycles?
Yeah, all British, yes.
Anything else about the motorcycle? It's quite interesting.
I will tell you one thing. On the London Land's End Trial, we stopped at one place with an old lady ran, and we stopped to do bed and breakfast. Her name was Mrs. Durham, and she said she was a medium, a mystic. And later on, when I was missing, she said if they sent her apart, some of my kit down to them, she would tell them where I was. But she never found out.
So any other recreation? I mean, did you go to pubs? I mean, some people do.
Oh, yes, you went to a pub occasionally, yes.
What were they like then? Because they've changed again.
It's not like they are now. Very, very orderly, very clean, very nice. Our local one was a very nice pub.
And would you drink much?
No.
How many pints?
Just half a pint and maybe two in an evening, that would be all.
Two
and
halves.
That would be only once a week. On a Saturday night.
What else did you? Did you go to? Because they had dance halls then.
Yes, yeah.
Did you go there?
Yes.
So can you tell me what a dance hall was like? Because they certainly don't have dance halls anymore. No. I mean, what would a typical evening out at a dance hall be like?
Well, one thing, they were unlicensed, so there was no drinking. There was always a very good band. The place was always scrupulously clean. They were very well looked after, and it was always well attended. There'd be hundreds of people at them every time. Very good. A very good night out in the dance hall, and a very cheap evening out to it that way.
And live music?
Oh, live music, a band, yes, a proper live band, yes.
And which sort of music was it? I mean, it's dance music, but was it sort of the American swing?
No, it's ours, and then American swing was just coming in then, but they were all top-class band leaders that did the job. People like Ambrose and those sort of people. They're very good.
And there was never any trouble?
Hardly ever.
What, any other? I mean, did you go to boys' clubs or?
No.
Anything else? Snooker?
Oh no! I learnt to play snooker at home. My dad bought us a snooker table.
Now, so the war started, and there's a phony war. Now you tried to join up, and they wouldn't. They said come back in a few months.
That's right.
Now tell me about the second time when you went in, and they signed you up. Then.
That's right. Straight away.
In March,
1940.
Now, do you remember any tests or interviews you had with them when they did? This is a Royal Air Force Volunteer
Reserve, yes. Well, first of all, they said, we want you straight away. Is that all right with you? I said, yes. And they swore me in, which conscripts didn't do. Only volunteers were sworn in. I was sworn into the allegiance to the Queen, etc. You know. The next thing I knew, they said, well, we want you straight away, but we're going to take you to Cardington to fit you out. So I went to Cardington, which is in Bedfordshire. Fitted me out with uniform, all that sort of thing.
Now, do you remember what they gave you? Because, again, it's all changed.
Well, the uniform, two pairs of boots, a uniform, a great coat, and a gas mask.
And did it fit you?
Oh yes, it was quite a good service there, fitting people up. Quite a good service in there.
So that's also. And did you stay at Cardiff, or was that just a
no? But went to do that immediately. We got the uniform. We posted away. I was posted up to Morecambe to do initial training.
Now, who was that with?
With the Air Force.
No, but what you know, what unit within it?
Well, that was just a training part of the Air Force at Morecambe. It was what should we say? Well, they did drill and that sort of thing. That's all.
Now you haven't got your papers, so you go. But it would be an initial training
thing, right,
at Morecambe, and they can perhaps look that up and see. Now, what happened when you arrived? What was your reception like when you got to Morecambe?
Quite good, actually. They said, we'll take you around to your billet site, and they found we were billeted in private houses, in old boarding houses, because there were no holiday makers because of the war. They used all the houses as billets for the airmen up there.
And how many were in your billet?
Eight in our billet.
More than one to a room, then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Share a room with somebody, yeah.
And what was it like? Because these old landladies used to have a fearsome reputation. Was it true?
Actually, they were very good, because they thought we were looking after the lads sort of business. You know, they were very good. And we used to do our training on the seafront, marching up and down on the seafront.
Tell me what a typical day's training might be like, then. So how would the day start?
Would it be up? A sergeant would come round in the morning, wake you up about 6 o'clock, way outside the house, wake you all up, and you go for breakfast in the local church hall, and then we would go out on parade on the seafront. And they gave us a rifle to carry.
Now, that was your first time you'd done drill, was it?
That's right, yes.
Now, what did you think of drill?
I liked it, actually. I liked it very much.
Now, why did you like it? We're always interested.
It's a sort of different thing from what I was used to doing. I didn't mind the discipline. I liked that because it made me feel good.
Did you understand why you had to do so much
drill? Oh, yes, yes.
Why?
Well, I thought it might be necessary because even though you're going in the Air Force, you must have special training. And then you've got to have discipline to do a job, haven't you? And that taught you discipline.
And did any of them have trouble? Did you have any trouble? You know, some people have coordination problems.
No trouble at all, I can remember.
So you did lots of drill.
Yeah.
Was it actually on the beach or on the...
On the seafront.
And what else, what other types of training would you do?
Well, nothing else with that. We didn't... that was all part of the training, all physical exercise and that sort of thing. It was all part
PT
of...
PT as well?
Yeah, that was all
Tell
part...
Tell me about that. What kind of PT?
Mostly exercise work, a bit of running, but not very much, because they didn't have a space to do the running in.
So by PT, you mean them sort of that's Swedish
right.
exercises,
that's right. That's
but
right.
arms and legs.
Just to try and keep you fit, that's all.
Anything else? Any aircraft recognition or anything?
No, not at then, not then.
So just basically a lot of drill, PT,
yeah.
Anything else? How about, did you have to sort of prepare for kit inspections and things?
Yes, yes.
Now tell me how you do that.
Well... You had to lay it out on your bed, but because not being in an ordinary Air Force billet, being in an ordinary house, it wasn't so easy to do. You laid all your kit out, and the sergeant came round to inspect it with the duty officer, but there was never any bother with that because we were all raw recruits and they didn't care about it very much.
Did you learn to bull your boots and things like
oh,
that?
Oh, yes, yeah.
So tell me how you bull your boots, oh, well, people don't know again.
Yeah, we had those boots that were sort of crinkly, so you said you rub them with a spoon to get all the crinkles out.
Is that a hot spoon?
No,
just a normal spoon
and rub it and get. And they did supply you with the polish, undubbing, they called it. You kept on polishing and polishing. But they weren't all that, they weren't so bothered about that in the Air Force at the beginning because they were so short of people, they wanted to get them through as quickly as possibly could.
Now, I forgot to, what had you been signed up to do?
As an instrument maker.
Now, why instrument maker?
Because of my job, they thought it was, you know, as a dharma matter, of skilled hands, they thought it would be good. But actually, it had nothing to do with that at all, but they thought it was.
But you, at this stage, you wouldn't get any special training in that?
No, no.
So, but that's what you were going to be?
That's what I was going to be.
So anything happened? How did you get on with the other lads? Let's talk about that. You know the other chaps at Morecambe?
Oh, well, my friendly. I made friends with one person, a special person. We got on very well together. And he said to me one evening, "Do you go to church much?" I said, "Not very often." He said, "Well, we'll go to church tonight. And then when we go, well, you'll get an invitation from the people to go back and have supper." So that was a way to get a good supper.
And were you all the sort of same background?
Oh, mostly, yes, mate. Mostly, yes.
And no bullying then from...
No, none at all.
And how did you get on with the instructors, you know, the drill instructors, the PT instructors?
Oh, I like them. They're very strict, but I like them. I got on well with them, had no bother at all.
What do you mean you like them? I mean, were they actually friendly?
Oh, yes, they were quite friendly when they weren't doing the job, and when they were doing the job, they were strict.
Was there a lot of shouting and swearing, as you might... Or was it
no,
more controlled than
more
that?
More controlled, much more controlled.
Any other... what about the officers? Would you see much of your officers at the IT?
Only very few officers. Only two officers in the whole thing there, because they were. That's the sort of job they did. They weren't flying officers or people in anything technical. They were just, what do they call them? Wingless wonders.
Did you look up to them, or were they just...
Oh, yes, you had to.
Now, what about the local civilians? How did they treat you in Moore?
Very well, actually. Very well.
Not just the Lally's, but the rest of them.
No, they very well. They looked after us very well.
Right, now, so how long were you at? You arrived, what, in March, yeah. 40. How long were you doing this?
Only about a month, I think. Not much longer than that, the initial training.
And then where?
Then to Cranwell.
Now, what was at Cranwell?
That was the airport. That's the biggest training college. It's like Sandhurst in the army. It's the biggest training college, officers training college, in the Air Force. But I wasn't an officer. I was sent to do these instrument course there because they had a place there where they were teaching the instruments of all the instruments for aircraft and things like that. But the main thing, they were teaching me to do the new Mark 14 bomb sight. And the automatic pilot, which I took special courses on. Well, and that's a big thing. I'll tell you about that later.
So what was the sort of ground training? You know, those are the two things you were going to specialise in.
Yeah.
But how did they start? So are you actually at the training college, Cranwell?
Yeah, Cranwell.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, it's Cranwell Training College, yeah.
What's the basics of the trade that they're going to teach you before you get on to that? I mean, how do they actually teach you the skill of instrument training, or was that presumed you already had it?
Well, they had mock aircraft things, instrument panels and things like that, and they went right through and basically told you how they worked and why they worked. And one of the things I did learn that it wasn't air pressure that altered it, it was air vacuum that altered it. You had to have a pump to pump the air out of things before the instrument would work. It's completely opposite what you thought it would be, but that's one of the main things. But the main thing was the bomb sight. And the automatic pilot.
Well, tell me about the which do you want to do first, a bomb sight or automatic pilot?
We did both of them at the same time.
But which do you want to tell me first?
I will tell you about the bomb sight. It was the Mark 40. It's the latest bomb sight in the Air Force. It was just coming into operation.
Now, tell me how it worked. Well, tell me all about it.
Oh, yes.
As much as you can.
It worked on gyroscopes, so that you could pick a target on the ground, it automatically lock itself onto that, not with radar, but with these gyroscopes, and you could almost, they told you could pinpoint your target, but that wasn't really true. I can't think much else.
Was it complicated? I mean,
very complicated. It took, I suppose, about a month's training just on the one bomb site to get that organised into your mind to see what was happening with it.
And what were you meant to be doing with it? I mean, you're an instrument maker. Are you making it, or are you going?
No.
Because you're not.
When you got into an aircraft, you had to overhaul. You were responsible for all the instruments on an aircraft.
So although you're called an instrument maker,
you weren't a maker at all.
You're an overhauler.
That's right. You're looking after things and keeping things going. That's the main thing.
What sort of problems might happen with a gyroscopic bomb sight then? The Mark 14.
Well, for one thing, is that the air pressure would go, or the air vacuum would go wrong, and the gyroscopes wouldn't work. And a gyroscope does what they call it topples. If it's not going properly, it falls sideways, and everything goes out. Nothing works. So you had to make sure you had it. That's one of the major things you had to do, keep that going. That was a very awkward job, actually.
Why? How would you do it? Well, try and do it.
Well, you just have to keep on trying until you've got it working. Once you can get the gyroscope working, everything was okay again. Instruments on most aircraft those days worked on the gyroscope anyway, on separate gyroscopes. And you had to keep them going all the time. And as I said before, they didn't work on air pressure, they worked on vacuum. So you had to keep this pump going to pump the air out right, things work.